Now, before we jump into the topic of this conversation, just want to make everyone aware that I've recently been demonetized on YouTube. I will be able to reapply for monetization on the 26th of November, but until then, YouTube has turned the tap off in terms of being able to make advert revenue, which was quite a significant portion of my income on a monthly basis. I've had a really amazing outpour of support from people via PayPal, Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon, contributing to try and help me get through this short little process of demonetization on YouTube. And I just want to say thank you so much to all of you that have already donated and given what you can. It's really much appreciated. Anyone else who's able to do that to help support my work whilst I kind of navigate through this brief period of demonetization on YouTube, that would be much appreciated. They didn't give me a solid reason why I was demonetized. It was apparently a copyright infringement, but they didn't specify the video. I tried to reappeal and they denied my reappeal. So yeah, that's my situation right now.
The brain is an anchor for consciousness. And so what does that mean? It means that consciousness can inhabit our brain, and our brain helps regulate and structure that consciousness. But a brain is required to anchor the consciousness. Now, I'm a firm believer that it does not matter what that brain is made of. I think consciousness can be anchored in various different mediums, whether that's a crystalline structure, whether that's a, silicon structure, anything sufficiently complex that mirrors the same type of architecture, could be an anchor for consciousness. So why is that? It goes in line with what you're saying. It's a type of receiver. It's a structure that allows the reception of consciousness. Where does consciousness come from? I have no idea. I don't even try to speculate where it comes from because it, in part, it lives in us through the anchor. But I'm a firm believer. I don't know if there's a soul, but what I do feel very surely about is that consciousness, once it leaves the anchor, doesn't just go nowhere. It either goes back to a source or I'm not sure, but consciousness is not solely s secured in this reality. And there's enough scientific experimentation that showcases this to be true. Consciousness plays an effect on reality. So therefore, it is not intrinsically anchored to reality only. It has one foot in reality and one foot somewhere else. We have no idea where that other place is, but that's where it lives, in two places at once, probably more than two places.
I agree, and I'm fascinated by it. I also think that I truly do think that this is something that was cultivated at a more advanced level by our ancestors. They just didn't have the same template of explaining it or expressing it as we have now, so we don't really recognize it until we, discover some of these things and then look back on our history books and go, oh, well, that's actually what they were referring to. It's a bit like NASA recently discovering that there's another kind of energetic field around our planet, another subtle energy field that I didn't know existed. And it's like, well, we look back at the Sufis and the mystics. They've been telling you about these energy fields since the dawn of human civilization. But because we lacked the empirical evidence of it, people dismiss these things. And I think that really speaks to something important, that despite the lack of an ability to definitively prove it, later down in time, it is proven that intuition beats scientific empiricism to the door. Like, intuition beats reductionism. It might not be able to produce the kind of like solid result of it, but it had the information before the scientists.
I think intuition is a very powerful force in evolution, in that it allows individuals of a certain species to either subvert a crisis or act on intuition. Just because we can't define the mechanisms currently that cause intuition doesn't negate its reality. And this makes me think of an argument I had with a prominent friend and scientist who we were talking about the grand unification theory, and he's made a statement basically saying there'll never be a grand unification theory. And I looked at him and I said, doesn't matter because this is, it's proof that there is a unification theory. We just don't, we can't define it. We're living in the fact that there is a grand unification theory. It's real. We just can't define it or explain it. And I think this happens in science all the time. It's because if we can't define or explain, we immediately write it off as a non-real variable. It's a non-integer. It's nothing. But I think intuition is actually a real phenomenon, and it's probably based in some sort of quantum mechanism that connects our consciousness to other realities, or so realities overlay each other in this, in my perspective and knowledge of this topic. Realities are overlaid upon each other infinitely, but some realities are closer than others. And what intuition could very well be is a quantum mechanism within our bodies, that allow us to quickly connect with the reality. We're not in control of them, just like a butterfly is in control of being iridescent blue. It's a quantum property of its wings. It just is. And until recently, we didn't understand how that was happening, but we know now. Or how a gecko can stick to any surface, because a gecko is really getting into the subatomic world to connect with, materials at subatomic scales, utilizing quantum properties. So we do leverage quantum mechanical mechanisms in our brain. And so I fully believe that intuition someday will be explained as, oh, this is a phenomenon based on whatever is in our brains, connecting with another closely intertwined reality, kind of signaling to us. We can't always make sense of it, and it's not always right because the realities differentiate slightly, sometimes a lot, but that's what I think's going on.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think these are kind of like fleeting states of quantum coherence in the brain, and allowing for very strange information to kind of flow in. And it's funny because talking about like a unified field theory or a unified theory, our science, I think, will struggle because of its divisive nature. I mean, how do you find unification in division and destruction? Because even on a fundamental level, our science is about combustion and smashing protons and electrons together and blowing apart atoms. And I wonder if, the truth of it is that it's really about that unification. It's about brain hemisphere synchronization. It's about intuition and logic, and it's about coupling complementary, naturally occurring harmonics and energies with the correct configurations in technology. And that's why I think when you look at the ancient ancestors, some of the examples of what we just see as tourist attractions might actually be fantastic technologies where they were essentially leveraging natural materials, naturally energetic materials, limestone, rose quartz, granite, things that are piezoelectric or amplifying for acoustics. And they were configuring these into very, specific geometric formations and patterns that came from these previous things we were talking about, these previous intuitions that were passed down. And they were putting them onto these geomagnetic grid lines. People say ley lines, but we know that geomagnetic grid lines exist on the planet, and these are essentially what the more spiritual community calls ley lines. They were, orientating them astronomically to very precise alignments to true meridian north. This to me is a technology. The wires and the cables are invisible. This is like Tesla technology of the ancients, in my opinion. They're leveraging ionosphere energies, they're leveraging grid lines of biomagnetic energies in their bodies and in the planet, the Schumann resonance, things like this. And I think we've lost complete touch with something that was extremely different in terms of an avenue of technological progression. And we've gone down the break apart, blow it up, burn it up type of route. And I think that the other route that maybe was a previous iteration of our civilization on this planet went the complete opposite way, unification.
I have the same kind of extrapolation you do, but I look at it a little differently. If you consider that in the timeline of human beings, we're talking tens of thousands of years, If one civilization that spanned 1,000 years, we'll say, a lot can happen in 1,000 years, but in general, that's not a long chunk in human history. So let's say a civilization spent 1,000 years experimenting solely with these types of technology. You don't need to define anything. They don't need to know the greater mathematics or physics of how these things work. They just learned that certain types of stone conducted this type of energy or amplified this type of sound, and then through experimentation developed systems and methods and techniques and technologies to advance that. And then at some point that got lost, whether through catastrophe or what. And then eventual early civilizations tried to pick up where they left off without any reference. I think that's what happened. And so when I refer to like those early prehistory civilizations that probably almost certainly existed, and they had levels of technology, they could still be like Iron Age, but that's still a level of technology that would allow them to do that if that's what they focused on. If that's what for 1,000 years your culture did nothing but research these amazing phenomenons and were able to, discern what does what, you could accomplish some really interesting things. And we've never, this current civilization has never even done that. So we look at it like that can't, like, what the heck's going on? Why would they do this? How could they have come up with this? It's because we took a different branch. We took an entirely different branch. So I get really irritated when professionals or educators or researchers or scientists that are well wrapped up in academia really poo-poo this notion that there were previous civilizations because they say, where's the evidence? Well, megalithic structures built to such a degree, aligned with astronomical orientation, encoded with pr sophisticated mathematics, leveraging certain materials of stone. These are all hallmarks of high technology. But high technology does not necessarily mean silicon technology. It doesn't. And that's the differentiation.
That's the thing that interests me, right? It's almost like, did they focus on internalizing or externalizing? Like, we seem to focus on externalizing, so our technologies are all very kind of objectively clear in our society. We have satellites flying around the planet and all of this, but it seems like, yeah, they could have been at Iron Age. They could have been at Iron Age levels of that level of type of technological expression, but then they were using harmonic subterranean resonance chambers to
Yeah.
activate their microtubular architecture and potentially opening up biological wormholes and astrally projecting. And
Yeah.
like,
Absolutely.
who's more advanced? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of cognitive dissonance to assume that when we say they're leveraging technology, they have to be, having LCD screens or like, having combustion engines or having an electric motor, or although there is some indication that they did kind of leverage some forms of primitive electric motors, but that's speculation. It's hard to discern because academia puts such a tight lid on researching certain topics. And this brings me back to the problem with the scientific endeavor today. It used to be science was in the pursuit of discovery. Today, science is meant to clamp down and reestablish what is known. Any sort of discovery, if it's too much, is immediately shot down. I mean, we saw this with what's his name? Who went on jo the actor,
Terrence Howard.
Terrence Howard. So Weinstein did a great job kind of pointing out where he was wrong. I mean, to be fair, Terrence Howard wasn't a scientist or mathematician, so like of course he wouldn't know this, but the very fact that Terrence Howard was curious and investigated pissed off all of academia. Like, why is that?
How dare you? How dare you? This
Exactly.
not
It
one of us.
offended them.
Yeah.
It offended them so much. And at least Eric gave him the opportunity. And he pointed out where he was wrong and articulated that well and respectfully, but also gave him kudos on several things that were actually interesting.
Yeah.
So, like,
I mean, those higher dimensional configurations that he developed were fascinating. Like the thing that he kind of put together. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
Really
pretty good. And the questions he was asking are questions that modern scientists and researchers would never dare to ask because of what happened to Terence. They wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. For a long time, the fractal universe theory was seen as cuckoo, you know, and simulation theory was nutty. Now, most people believe to some degree that these theories probably resonate a little more than our earlier models, like the Big Bang. The Big Bang theory just doesn't work. It doesn't work. There are objects in space that are older than the known universe as we've dated it. So that immediately crushes the Big Bang theory. It just never made sense. It was intended to explain something so complex easily. And it was a dumb theory, and I never liked it even as a kid. But academia is really needs to be turned around. It's become more of a social ladder than
right.
what it's intended.
But that's it again. Just speaking back to something that we've kind of repeatedly highlighted is that the old system is not working, right? Like this status quo of orthodoxy and dogma, no matter where it is, whether it's in politics or economics or science or social policy, like it's not working anymore. And disruptive agents are beginning to pop their heads up if it's a scientific breakthrough or a certain kind of movement that's starting to provoke people in populism, the alternative media space. It feels like we are absolutely kind of going neck and neck against this old system. And like you said, we've got a foot in this new world with the technological development of AI and the things that are just going to come accelerating our way. And I'd like to think that these kind of old, ancient, I mean, this is what Terence McKenna would refer to as the archaic revival, this kind of bringing back of ancient methodologies and practices, but under the lens of scientific scrutiny. And I think we have a lot to learn from our past if we actually scrutinize it properly. And I also think a significant amount of our history has been whitewashed and suppressed. I really do not think we have a good idea of our long-term, long-scale history. You know, say nothing of modern history. That's obviously going to be full of misinformation. But our ancient, ancient past, I think there's been a serious amount of cover-up involved in that, to be honest, you know.
It's a fact. There has been many, many decades, if not centuries, of cover-up. What the cover-up, I don't think the cover-up was really a Illuminati scale to keep people from knowing anything. It was more of the academics of the time didn't want all of these alternative theories to be presented or researched because it would destroy their career. People are, inherently selfish. And when you've dedicated 40, 50, 60 years to a topic, the last thing you want is some asshole, 20-year-old or 30-year-old, throwing that in the dustbin because they are thinking outside of the box. So I think what this is a pattern over the last 200 years where we don't allow thinking out of the box and we squash it all the time. And this is why so many of the world's prominent museums have secret archives of artifacts. Now, explain to me why the Smithsonian, why the Vatican, why the Museum of Cairo, why it would be necessary to have secret artifacts from society. It's just human history. So the only thing I can discern from that is that there is information to be garnered that would break down our current narrative and really expose thousands and thousands of prominent academics and throw their work out the window. And so they're in control of that. So just like politicians aren't going to vote in rules for, term limits, academics aren't going to allow artifacts to be investigated that completely destroy their life's work. It's just not going to happen, which is tremendously unfortunate. And then you get into like the World Economic Forum playing with, archaeological sites.
Yeah, Göbekli Tepe and
Yeah, no, that is the saddest thing ever. And it was so clearly intentional, just paving over this oldest site known to man and planting trees that are known to like root and break up rocks. And it's just like,
well, hang on,
it's,
is that what they, because I know that they took ownership of the site under some sort of weird,
a
shady
shell company. Yeah, but
shell company.
there's very
Are they
tight
actually planning on
affiliations.
disturbing the site by paving over parts of it?
They've already paved over much of it. They
I
built
did not
road.
know that.
Yeah, they paved over. They built some roads over it, and then they planted olive tree farms over a large chunk of the site. To and in Turkey, where this is located, it's illegal to cut down olive trees, so there will never be excavation done underneath them. And that this is an obvious move. It was a pretty ingenious way to make sure that no more excavation occurred.
Oh my gosh, yeah,
I've
I'm just looking it up now. It's absolutely true. They've already planted a significant amount of
yeah,
trees.
it's disgusting. And we as a civilization need to really we need to fight back when our history collectively, so it doesn't matter what country you're from, what religion, race, we are all humans. We all have the fundamental right to know our history. And what's happening is that's being taken away from us. And that really, really bothers me. I always tell my wife, I'm like, if I was a billionaire, I would literally invest in archaeological excavation. I'd pay off governments or whoever I needed to do it to fund these excavations, because it just needs to be done. We've had LIDAR, very powerful LIDAR systems for a long time. Now tell me, why is the entire world not LIDAR? Why don't we have penetrating maps of the entire Earth that we can see where, the tracks, the fingerprints of ancient civilization? Because I suspect again that's not a desirable thing.
Oh,
That they
you'd show too many of the deep underground bases that they aren't,
Yeah, well, they can blur that out. They do that, I can understand why they would do some of that, but like there are, plenty of places in the Congo or in the Amazon rainforest or in the deep deserts that could be LIDAR'd.
Well, they did LIDAR in the Amazon basin and discovered incredible architecture, but that's what I'm
Like
saying. Even a small amount
fractional, yeah.
Amazon basin revealed that there were foundations and geometries that suggest a massive settlement. And I completely agree. It's disturbing, and it makes me wonder about bigger implications. Why would the World Economic Forum have the intention of paving over one of, well, the oldest known site of an advanced civilization or advanced culture? Why? I mean, if there isn't some sort of incredibly disruptive truth to be discovered that would change things in a way that they don't like, why would you make such incredible efforts to, pave over a heritage site that should be looked at? Why is the Middle East somewhere that's a veritable gold mine of archaeology and, the birthplace of so much civilization, ancient Sumer and Mesopotamia? Why are these places of conflict zones forever? It makes me think that there are larger scale issues going on that would precipitate invasion of the Middle East. There's a whole rabbit hole to go down there, but one element of it, inignorable, you can't ignore it, is that you can't do archaeology in these places, and these are some of the most important places in the world to be doing archaeology.
And it blows my mind because, for example, there are fiber optic cameras that are like 2 millimeters thick, so very, very tiny, and they're on a thin line. So you could, in theory, drill a 2 millimeter hole in the pyramids, and they would never be seen, and you're not really destroying the pyramid at all. And you could see and look for other chambers. They will never allow that to happen. And that's not because of we want to preserve the pyramid, because they're constantly doing things that alter the state. They drill holes in for handrails. I mean, so don't tell me that like that's going to ruin the pyramid. They don't want certain things to be researched. And I don't know if it I don't think it has like an alien agenda with it or anything. It's like control. It comes back to control, narrative control. You know.
If there was something in our history that suggested that we were so much greater than we are right now, I guess that is a very powerful potential accelerator of something that they don't want, which again comes back to division, 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 you know, divide and conquer. That's been the program for a very long time. And, you know, finding out that we were once a globally connected civilization, if that is the case, if Atlantis is real, if these types of things are real, that could lead us down a route that they would find dangerous.
I think it just boils down to narrative control. It's just another variable for them to, I don't even know how important of a variable. They just kind of look through a list and make sure that all these boxes are checked, you know,
Well,
not too many things.
just look at the visceral response that came from Graham Hancock's Netflix series. I mean, that in
Oh,
of
aren't they doing another season?
they are doing
I'm
another
so
season.
excited.
I can't wait. I was very happy to see that Keanu Reeves is on there with Graham Hancock at one point, so Neo has
Interesting.
officially validated this, which I find I just love Neo to Keanu Reeves. I think he's such a great guy. But yeah, Graham Hancock's doing another season on Netflix. I know some people kind of go, "Oh, it's on Netflix, so it can't be that disruptive." But I think there's a very important series of avenues that Graham's going down. And again, just going back to this insane response that came from the mainstream media when he first put out the what's it called, Ancient Apocalypse. I mean, do you remember this?
I read Fingerprints of the Gods. I think it was the late 90s. It was my first tome. That book was a tome. It was huge. And it that blew my mind. Most of his hypotheses in that book have been, he's admitted that, you know, they were just hypotheses and they're not sound anymore. But what it did was open my eyes to, wait a sec, there could be fingerprints from an earlier civilization. And I've seen and read all of his work, so yes, that's the long answer.
Did you see the response from the media when this Netflix series
Yeah, they called him a racist, which has
you
nothing to
had
do
like
with race.
you had Rolling Stones magazine saying he was promoting far right propaganda and like you
Yeah,
had all the
I don't understand the correlation. I just
well
don't.
it's a very strange correlation. There is a thread to be drawn that would allow them to make this, but it's a very strange correlation because a lot of it comes back to the fact that the Nazis and like the kind of upper level sanctum of Nazi ideology, once you got into kind of like the Thule Society and Anna Nerber and the Vril Society, all these kind of weird secret societies, they believed in Atlantis. They believed that they were descendants of Atlantis and that there was this kind of Aryan race, pure race. It
So
ties
that's the tie
in.
that they were
Yeah,
using.
it does tie in because of the
That's interesting. Did Rolling Stones do a story on Operation Paperclip? Yeah, nothing to say about any of that.
That's the problem, is that they just go, oh, it's this crazy Nazi idea. And it's like, actually, no, it's a very old idea that came from Plato and Solon and the Greeks and the, you know,
Yeah,
the
and Tibetans.
and the Tibetans. So you're co-opting it with this weird politicized ideological agenda that you've put on it. And I just think that the speed at which that happened with his Netflix series, again,
It was
suggests we're really not allowed to look into this. They really don't want us looking into it. And it just makes me wonder why. Same with UFOs and things like this. It's just another, you know, another one on the pile. Now, before we jump into the topic of this conversation, just want to make everyone aware that I've recently been demonetized on YouTube. I will be able to reapply for monetization on the 26th of November, but until then, YouTube has turned the tap off in terms of being able to make advert revenue, which was quite a significant portion of my income on a monthly basis. I've had a really amazing outpour of support from people via PayPal, Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon, contributing to try and help me get through this short little process of demonetization on YouTube. And I just want to say thank you so much to all of you that have already donated and given what you can. It's really much appreciated. Anyone else who's able to do that to help support my work whilst I kind of navigate through this brief period of demonetization on YouTube, that would be much appreciated. They didn't give me a solid reason why I was demonetized. It was apparently a copyright infringement, but they didn't specify the video. I tried to reappeal and they denied my reappeal. So yeah, that's my situation right now.